seen Dougie Fresh?
Yes.
Have you ever seen a show with fellas on the mic with one-minute rhymes that don't come out right? They bite.
They never write.
That's not polite. Am I lying?
No, you're quite right.
Well, tonight, on this very mic, you're about to hear,
we swear, the best star rappers of the year. So,
cheerio,
yell,
scream bravo.
Also, if you didn't know, this is called the show.
All right, John DeAndre, we are on the air.
Wow, I'm glad to be here, Michelle.
And I'm happy to have you on the show. In case you don't know, this is the person that is responsible for me being the announcer that I am, as far as news and knowing things and knowledge. He was very generous to me 20-something years ago when I walked into a newsroom with a lot of confidence. And he said, all right, I'll give you the confidence, but what do you know? And I'm like, all right, I know some stuff. I may not know everything, but I know some stuff. And we really did work well together.
Well, thank you. We were a good afternoon team.
We were a great afternoon team.
5 full years. That's a long time in, as you would say, terrestrial radio.
Absolutely. So I am more than pleased to welcome John DeAndre to the show. John has been in radio and in civics and in government in the New Haven area for, I don't know, most of his life. You know, he even became, weren't you a mayor for the day as a kid?
kind of, yeah. No, I was principal of the day.
And you were principal? Yeah, but didn't you show me, like, John?
Oh, no, that was the Read to Succeed Award winner
program
in the city of New Haven Public Schools back in 1970. I still have the trophy. It was a rainbow coalition of kids. I was one of them. There were two with the same last name, ironically. And we were all huddled together, and I think Jerry Tarazzi was the school superintendent at the time.
Yes,
we had to read so many books in fourth grade. Yeah, that was the big plane thing.
On your way to being an announcer. So let me tell you who he is formally. From 1984 until the end of last year, 33 years, that's what she wanted to say, as a broadcast news journalist working at several radio stations in Southern Connecticut. Not only as a reporter, news anchor, and most recently, nearly 20 of those years, hosting a weekly local radio news interview program on a New Haven area AM radio station, which I can say is WQUN. He spent the first 11 years in radio news full-time and 22 years part-time. And during that full-time period, John was my boss. He was assistant news director at WELI Radio. And it was in those 22 years radio part-time, he began to venture out into other things, including a few years as a legislative aide at the state capitol, as well as an aide to a local mayor.
I think that was my disco period.
Probably. I remember you having the car with the really big spokes on them, and I always used to tease you and say, hey, you're driving the principal car. He found his home full-time in teaching, securing a social studies teaching degree along with other degrees in education. First, having taught evening classes for adult immigrants who were studying to complete their American citizenship, and as a full-time educator, teaching social studies primarily government and psychology on the high school level, which you're still doing now,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, and it kind of these days goes hand-in-hand, government and psychology.
Right, exactly, because you got to figure out what is really being said, what's really on folks' mind. So again, ladies and gentlemen, I welcome the one, the only John DeAndre to the show.
It's good
to be
here.
Thank you so much for coming on.
I'm honored to be here. I mean, you dusted me off of my nice year of retirement that I've kind of been in.
Yeah. Well, you know, once you get the bug, once you're bitten, you're always
And you're right. And last year around this time, I decided I had kind of had enough and it was time to, you know, get out of town for a while. And this year, I have to say, I took a rest. I regrouped, and I think in 2019, I'm going to try to find my new niche in this new age of radio.
Yeah. So John will be back. Are you coming back once a month?
Oh, yeah.
I'd like for you to come back once a month.
Yeah, there's plenty of stuff. So we can talk.
Plenty of stuff for us to talk about.
Every other month, whatever your schedule, you know. Okay. This is your baby on a midweek. So yeah. You decide that.
All right. Yeah. Thank you, boss. But the reason why John is here, not so much to reminisce with me, but we really wanted to have an in-depth conversation about civics and how important that is. I think now more than ever, we are realizing that the American public doesn't know very much about government, to the point where the simplest thing is always the three forms of government, which makes the United States different from every place else around the planet.
And that was your invite to me, because we had dinner at a local diner here in the Elm City, and you had this bugaboo about civics. You were going on and on about civics and the lack of civics education. And it's like, well, I teach what they call government, which last decade was called civics.
Uh-huh. Why
now it's
change?
Called government. I think because the onus is on more of governmental foundations.
Uh-huh.
And then if you can get kids to really do civics-oriented projects, that's great. But I think they found that the focus had to be on governmental foundations first.
Mm-hmm.
And then if kids found their niche in that what they wanted to do, maybe go work out on a campaign,
right.
Maybe have a rally, you know, go help senior citizens do those kind of projects, then that's great. But they found that the kids really didn't have a strong foundational base. And their parents, which are our generation, younger.
Or younger, yeah.
That didn't know a lot about the simple things, like the three branches of government, or the worst part of teaching government, the Electoral College.
Okay.
You know, how do you get kids to understand that, especially, or even, you know, young adults who might still be in high school at 18 when they cast their vote? What do you mean?
Right.
My vote doesn't count for president? Well, yes and no. I mean, I was one of those kids
back,
you know, almost 40 years ago. I left high school not really fully understanding, you know, the Electoral College. There wasn't any need to. It didn't hit you. But now this generation in 2016 and then, you know, 10, 15, almost 20 years earlier in 2000, all of a sudden, the Electoral College is the hot topic, and no one fully quite understands how it works.
How it works, yeah. And people are advocating to get rid of it.
Exactly.
You know, which, does that interfere with our checks and balances? But first, what's civics?
To me, what civics is a well-rounded government education. So in the old days, even just 10 years ago, because by state law, you have to change your textbooks about every 10 years.
Oh, okay.
So in the 2000s, my government books were government and civics education. That's
okay.
What it would say, or something like that. It would have some civic, or just called civics.
Yeah.
And in it, it had the government foundations. Then it had other things, like how to be a good citizen.
Right.
There were chapters. Also, they'd branch out into economics. Briefly, not, you know, in depth, but this is the economic system that we have in this country. And here's how you become an active participant in that. It would take a couple of pages to talk about a checkbook. We'll talk a couple of pages about the stock market.
Okay.
And the importance of that.
So that sounds like really you being a good capitalist.
yeah, kind of. Yes. How to survive in America.
Exactly.
So it would skirt away from the three branches of government, the old English documents, the English Bill of Rights, all those documents that led us into the Declaration of Independence, the Articles of Confederation, and then the Constitution, you know, all the old stodgy stuff that had God in every other sentence.
Right, and bored people to tears, which is why we have what we have now. Because I think for a lot of people, you know, let's face it, you know, unlike you and I, who have a general curiosity of just about everything and how it works, because that's, you know,
those
really the fundamental
instincts.
Right. That's what fundamentally makes a reporter. You know, not everybody has an interest in history.
No.
But how do you And how did you, as an instructor, keep people engaged in something like civics and government?
Well, before I actually got into the high school level, I had a good 10 years part-time at night while I was still doing my radio thing, working with immigrant adults to get their naturalization. So that test was pretty steep for some of them.
Yeah.
And that got me to thinking about, okay, these incongruities. I'll always use the Electoral College as the biggest one. But also the Pilgrims versus the Puritans versus which of the 10 amendments, the first 10 amendments, is the most important? Well, everyone says, well, we can't have the rest if we don't have the first.
Right.
You know, well, what does that really mean? So I had to sit down with them on a very basic level, because usually those adults came to me with, they had to have
very little knowledge.
Well, they also had to have 2 years of English as a second language.
Okay.
We now call it English language learners.
Right.
They have 2 years of evening classes, because the citizenship test requires you to do a little writing. It also requires you to do a little speaking. And it requires you to study about 100 questions that I guarantee most of us...
I was going to say, most Americans can't pass that test.
Right. Right.
And
who
so...
impeaches... Can a president be removed from office?
Yeah.
Yes. Well, but how? What's the process of impeachment? There's two parts to impeachment.
And
we're hearing a lot of that in the news.
I was getting ready to say, and now we're talking about that. You know, we're beginning to hear more and more about impeachment. And for you and I, who've lived through at least almost two of them, right? Because Nixon resigned.
He got out of town before,
they hammered him.
Yeah.
And Bill Clinton was only censured.
He was impeached, but he wasn't removed
from office.
So that's like trying to teach a group of immigrant adults this, let alone teenagers this.
Right.
These are all the little nuances that we have in our government that are kind of interesting, I guess. And you say, well, let's just wipe the slate clean and make it clean. You know, why must there be two parts to everything?
Right.
Why must we go vote for president, but yet the Electoral College in December makes the decision?
Right.
You know, why can't it be the popular vote? That kind of thing. So getting back to your original question, I guess, was we're not as informed as we can be. Now, are we sleeping in high school maybe a little bit? Sure. But we kind of tend to remember more when we're actively involved in it.
Right.
Like the 2016 election. And on this station alone, it's always a hot topic on whether, regardless of whether you're a conservative, a moderate, or a liberal, the 2016 election has woken us up to, number one, the Electoral College. Number two, where do we stand as individuals in politics? When I teach, I call it a spectrum. You could be a liberal, a moderate, and a conservative, depending on the issue. Sometimes, you know, abortion rights brings out people on one side of that spectrum. Okay, the very liberal who believe a woman's right to have an abortion, or the conservative, absolutely not. My argument is, should that issue even be in government? A lot of times, gun control is another huge issue. You might have been a victim of a crime, so all of a sudden you're pro-gun. You may be a hunter, and all of a sudden you're pro-gun. You know, so you kind of go along that. A lot of people are not purely conservatives or purely liberals. I think a lot of that depends on the issue. For me, it does.
I think it's the issue, and I think it's your values. I think it's what you hold dear, you know, that in turn makes your values, and in turn, you know, makes you fall on separate sides of the spectrum. Now, the issue becomes, once that information is given, if it's given to you fairly, with both sides of an argument, then you can either have your mind changed, or you fall even harder into whatever side you were on.
It's kind of like nature and nurture. I can remember my grandmother on Worcester Street saying, you better vote for the Democrat. You better vote for the Democrat. And back then, the party lever.
Okay? Right.
You better pull that party lever. So I'm, you know, now a voting age, and it's been ingrained in my head that you better pull that party lever. Eventually, obviously, they got rid of the party lever.
Right.
And she passed on, but, you know, she was a FDR,
an Democrat.
FDR Democrat because he got them out of the Depression.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So she carried that with her. We carry certain things with us that we live through. We
live
through the Civil Rights era, Vietnam.
Yeah.
What else? The go-go late 80s and 90s, the meme.
Right.
You know,
right.
The economy booming and materialism, the age of materialism.
Yeah.
You know, we didn't have that as kids. You know, I can remember the Black Panthers.
Right.
You remember the Black Panthers.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
You remember the riots.
Yeah. May Day 1970.
Exactly. We were little kids.
We were
but
kids.
We remember it.
Yeah.
We were influenced by that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Just like our grandparents might have been influenced, like of the Depression, or maybe even farther back, our great grandparents, if they came here from another country, you know, and they settled, they dealt with living in a cold water flat somewhere.
Right. Right. Because they were in America.
Right.
And America gave you this choice. You know, you had the opportunities. No one was supposedly restricting you. And that worked well for some.
Yeah.
Yeah. Worked well for some, but for others, may have been a little bit different. But yet and still, laws are based on, I don't want to say social situations, but I think a lot of times, like you said,
Society influences.
Yes.
Yeah, of the times.
Yeah. Society influences the law, so we see changes. You know,
here's a good
Dred
example.
Scott was Dred Scott.
That's a good example. But here's a basic example in Connecticut.
Okay.
In the 80s, there's an overabundance of deer.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So they put into, they stiffen the deer hunting laws. Okay. I have this in reverse. In the 80s, all of a sudden, the deers go extinct.
Okay? Yeah.
We only have 3 deer left in Connecticut. All right, so they tighten up the deer hunting laws.
Mm-hmm.
What happens by 15 years later, by the year 2000? Drive the parkway at dusk. There's deer everywhere.
Yeah.
Okay? So we're reactionary a lot of times
to
things. That's an easy one. The deer.
But now,
that doesn't get political.
Right. Right. Well,
well,
it can
to
be.
A degree, I
to
guess,
a degree.
Yes, if you're a hunter.
Well, if you're a hunter, right, or if you're an environmentalist, right. You fall on either side of that, and that influences law. But why is it that people seem not to understand that a vote is not, are we not taught that a vote is just that, a vote, and not understanding, like, okay, so if this neighborhood votes for this politician,
right,
this neighborhood is now going to get more money for its streets, more services.
That's the politics.
That's the
why
politics
usually the force
of it.
Now is government and politics.
Okay.
That's the politics portion of it.
All right.
I guess the civics function of it would be, did you go and help that candidate win?
Okay.
Did
All
you
right.
work the polls on election day?
Okay.
Did you work a 15 or 16 hour day or longer, depending on especially presidential years? You know, did you, what role did you have?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and
what role did you play in getting that person elected or working for a particular bill?
Or
one
did
way
you
or
even,
the other?
Did you even research the candidate or did you just go like grandma told you to do, pull the party lever? Which this generation has no idea what a party lever is, okay? We don't even use those machines anymore.
Right, right. You know, you color stuff in now. So when we say that, is that the crux of being an American? When we have that phrase, your civic duty.
Is it to go to a Veterans Day memorial service or a Memorial Day parade?
Or is it to register people to vote? Is that civic duty?
I remember, and you were with me at the time in the 1990 mayoral election,
mm-hmm.
okay, the 1989 or 90 mayoral election, the Get Out the Vote
right.
to elect Mayor John Daniels. That was huge.
Yeah.
That was well planned.
Yeah.
I haven't really seen something like that in a long time.
In this area.
We were yeah. involved in it closely because we covered it as reporters.
Right.
That was well planned. That tapped the people. Some mm-hmm. elections just roll by.
Right, right. And people don't come out.
Right. And people came out in 2016 to elect a president.
Right.
They may not have gotten what they wanted, or they may have gotten what they wanted. And we're still talking about it 2 years later, where right. we now should be, once we get past the holidays, ramping up for the next election, because it takes 2 years.
Right, exactly. To get somebody elected president.
We're still, you know.
Right. We're still.
For whatever reasons, regurgitating. Focused on 2016. 2016.
Mm-hmm.
Now, granted, there may be some things coming down the road that you and I don't know.
Right.
That may be true and may change some things. We don't know. But it was highly contentious. It was very passionate.
Mm-hmm.
I can remember some presidential elections in the 80s and 90s.
That were very lackluster. Exactly.
This one was a little bit too much. But I'm wondering what effect it has on the kids or the young voters.
Well, I think, you know, in talking to your Bella Mia, mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm.
I think it made her passionate and drove her to get out to vote. And when she did not get a response on her absentee ballot, she went down to City Hall and corrected everything. So it made her a more engaged millennial.
Right.
You know, and I think a lot of her friends were very engaged, because you're right. People were very passionate and still are very passionate mm-hmm. about what has happened since 2016.
You have to be impacted, I guess,
yeah.
to react. But the days of, all right, the whole class going to the town hall and finding ways to be good community citizens, we're kind of, that's kind of, do that on your own now.
Yeah, but why?
I guess because there's no time. I mean, by law, the state statute says we only have to give a half year instruction of government in high school.
Uh-huh.
It requires teachers to do some government in fourth grade. It
yeah.
hardly comes up in eighth grade U.S. history, but
yeah.
it doesn't come up to the full degree. In New
and,
Haven,
and high school, what?
It's half year. And it,
okay.
now some schools have it in 9th, 10th. Some schools have it in 11th, 12th.
Okay.
The school I work in has flip-flopped it three times in the almost
wow.
20 years. It's down now in the 9th grade. I prefer it up in the 11th grade
yeah.
because they're more mature. They're more, they're somewhat more politically aware.
Yeah.
They're almost on the cusp, or some are actually 18 and able to vote.
Mm-hmm.
In ninth grade, they're a little bit too immature. You can teach them the foundations, but okay. Now
but everything else,
with it?
Yeah.
Now
they don't have it.
Where the older kids in the years when it was in the older grades in the school I was in, they would go to rallies, or they would start their own rallies. Or
right.
They'd start petitions. That's where you see civics,
and that's where
coming.
And, okay, yeah, because when we talk social media, right? A lot of campaigns, a lot of protests and rallies begin with people saying, "Okay, look, sort of a meetup situation on April 12th at 5:00. We're going to meet on the New Haven Green to protest A, B, and C."
Right,
and people come out for that. So in a way, that's a form of civic engagement.
Yeah.
But how is that social media's, I guess, gift to government, if you will?
I think it's a gift to the people if they use it.
You know, okay.
The kids aren't playing Fortnite or Candy Crush or whatever the newest game is out there.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, to a degree.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's a good use of social media. Not, you know, the Snapchat, where the kids, I don't know if you're
right.
familiar with Snapchat,
oh, yes,
but it goes
I am.
Away after 24 hours.
Right.
And they bully people on Snapchat.
Right.
So I'm not a member of Snapchat. I have Twitter. I have Instagram. Instagram
mm-hmm.
is more of my personal life and social stuff.
Yeah.
Twitter is fueled by the school that I work at. That's kind of like a news station. Almost.
Okay.
You
okay.
know, the daily schedule, if it changes, sports scores.
Okay.
I do a couple of fun vignettes every week, mm-hmm. on different days with kids who look forward to seeing themselves on it. It's kind of a news vehicle for me.
Yeah.
But their Twitters sometimes, if you look at theirs, the teenagers' Twitters, theirs are very distinct and about their passions.
Mm-hmm.
And some are. If you look at some of them, oh, wow, this person is following everything about Donald Trump, or this person is following everything about the Democrats, or this person is following everything about gun rights, pro and con.
Mm-hmm.
So you do see the older kids, we'll say the 11th and 12th graders, actually taking up their passions and expressing themselves on their social media. Now, sometimes they get themselves in trouble. They get themselves in trouble because they're not astute enough or mature enough to articulate, you know, that sometimes they go overboard.
Yeah, or to understand exactly what they've done.
Yes.
You know?
So that's where maybe I think the civics portion of take a stand. I know a lot of the stuff I do in government,
mm-hmm.
formerly known as civics, is take a stand. We're doing the Constitution.
So
I give you three issues, and I want you to read the articles. I want you to understand them factually,
mm-hmm.
the points of view that are being talked about, and I want you to take a stand, and I want you to back it up with the details that are in those articles.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take a stand, sit back, take a deep breath. And what is your feeling on whether voter registration should be lowered or hired or the drinking age should be lowered? Those kind of things. I want you to sit back and form an opinion.
Yeah.
And that's where I think the foundations of government become active. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
You know, should there be an electoral college? Should we abolish it?
Well, I want to come back to that because I want to ask, what's a more important focus? Is it on government fundamentals or is it on civics?
I think you have to have government fundamentals first
in order to understand what it is to be. Because basically civics is being a good citizen, right?
Correct. And I think you need to know
an involved citizen. Yeah, I won't necessarily say good, but some kind of involvement.
Yeah, if there's some local issue in your neighborhood, even, mm-hmm. They want to, you know, build some sort of chemical plant in your neighborhood, or a chemical plant is polluting the river,
mm-hmm.
and you get a petition going, that's civics. But you also have to know how government works on the local level, on the state level,
mm-hmm.
on the federal level.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think both. But I think the days of dragging every kid into some sort of civics participation is pretty much over due to time, due to the way society is structured.
Mm-hmm.
I think you got to get bit by the bug. It's almost like radio.
Yeah.
Okay. You get bit by the bug.
Yeah.
And it never leaves you.
Right.
And that's why we see them. We see activists today. We're in believe me, by no means are we in any dormancy period.
Well, I believe that we're not, but I just wonder, you know, with the questions that I hear sometimes from people, that they don't understand how our government works.
Because there's constant caveats, there's constant qualifiers to everything. You know, you go out to vote for president, but oops, you're not really voting directly for the president.
And this goes back to the Electoral College.
Right.
So explain what that is.
In terms of the Electoral College?
Yes.
The Electoral College was set up by our founding fathers, or framers, as we like to call them now. And it was meant as kind of a safety net. Basically, you know, if you read between the lines, and some books come right out and say it, it was a safety net because they didn't trust the electorate.
Or general
white,
public.
Basically, white men who own land.
Right, right.
To do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So whatever mm-hmm. that was, and I'm not a constitutional theorist, but I think their intentions were sort of pure and not political or cynical. Mm-hmm. I think they saw something maybe in the electorate at the time.
Yeah.
Considered the time.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a safety net Now, you know, we're hundreds of years beyond that.
Right.
We are in modern day 21st century society with all kinds of technology at our our whim. Do we really need that? But the argument is, well, then the election is going to be decided by California, Texas, New York, and Florida, maybe Illinois with Chicago. You know, that's usually the other side of it.
But we are a government of checks and balances.
And that's what it was.
And so
that's what it was intended to be.
Yeah.
It's been described as a safety net, a check and balance to give, you know, Delaware equal voice
with New York.
Correct.
Yeah. And so when you say that, then why is it that, say, Connecticut may have 6 electoral votes?
Correct.
And Delaware might have 2?
Correct.
I'm sure that's based on population, correct?
It's based on your number of representatives and your 2 senators. So, you know, obviously, I'm not sure how many representatives Delaware has.
Yeah.
It's Connecticut. I'm not, they may have exactly our number, or they may have less. But let's look at Texas and Connecticut, or Rhode Island and New York.
Right.
You know, is it really fair? You can argue that it's not fair.
Right.
And I go round and round on this every year personally. Because especially after the 2016 election, the election of 2000, we lived through 2 big ones.
Right.
This Bush versus Gore 2000 Supreme Court case.
Right.
And this 2016 election, which really isn't over yet, even though it is, I mean, the Electoral College
is closed.
Thing,
it's closed.
We're still, you know, contemplating or debating. I'm not sure what the answer is. I vacillate on it.
Mm.
You know? Why, it sure would make election nights easier to cover.
Well, you know, that's the that's the news director in you.
But I'm not sure what what were they thinking, the framers? What they were thinking? I'm not so sure. Maybe it still fits the model.
Well, now. I think you hit the head. You know, you hit the nail on the head. You know, the model is meant to be, at least the way I was taught about the Constitution, was that it was a living document.
Yes.
And so therefore it waxes and wanes, right?
Yes.
It, sometimes
it evolves with the times.
It evolves with the times, and it either flexes, right?
Expands and contracts.
It expands and it contracts. So when I hear people saying that it's not a living document, I don't think the framers intended for it to be very strict. And that's why we have our system of checks and balances. As you know, as we say in my house, those old white dudes were smart in the respect that they could very well see, and they had already experienced, you know, the monarchy of England.
Mm-hmm. There was that. Keep that in mind. Yes.
Yes.
That's
where their heads were. And the fact that now you've got these colonies and you're land owning, right? And so as these colonies grow and we do whatever it is with the land, you know, then we got this hiccup of slavery,
correct?
Right? Because now you don't want to
counting the slaves,
right? You don't want to count them as people. So now we've got this 3/5 clause, right?
3/5 compromise, yes.
And so with that, you know, is that an expansion? Is that a, you know?
In modern America, modern teenagers shake their head and look at that and go, what?
Right, because they think they can't understand.
Right.
Because they fully still don't know about slavery.
Correct.
Because slavery is not taught. It's almost like, oh, okay, we brought people into this country and they were slaves and the slaves were freed. Emancipation Proclamation. You know, it moves like this.
Right.
Without
we glance
really,
over it.
Right. Without really talking about not only was the Americas colonized, but there are colonies all over the planet thanks to Britain, right? Because there was that whole, the sun never sets on the British Empire.
Correct.
So when you start to think about colonization and you start to look at the laws involved in that, right? They're not necessarily based on government as they are motive.
Right.
But at the same time, I think that the old white dudes said, okay, we're not, in their own minds, you know, forgetting what happened to the Native Americans, what was done to them, you know, the Africans that they brought into the country, they're looking at themselves and saying, you know, we're all equal, right? That, and that in colonization is unheard of.
Let's don't forget, they had in the background, like the thunderstorm that had just passed was Mother England.
Yes.
So, you know, keep in, you know, reference and keep it in perspective.
You're right.
But in terms of the Constitution expanding and contracting, here's a good example in a very nimble way.
Mm-hmm.
In the 1990s, from 1990 to 2000, Connecticut lost population. Lost the banks, changed, the insurance industry changed.
Housing.
Technology changed, right? Where did people go? They left Connecticut. They went to South and North Carolina.
Right.
They went to Florida.
Right.
Okay, they went out west to New Mexico or California. We lost population in that 10 years. So in the 2010 census, all of a sudden we lost so much population, we lose a U.S. House of Representatives seat. We had six. We dropped down to five. Another state somewhere else, I'm going to guess the Carolinas.
Pick up one.
So, you know, somewhere in putting that together, that was probably good government instead of keeping, you know, it expands and contracts by population for the House of Representatives.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good thing. Obviously, every state has two U.S.
senators. Right, two U.S. senators regardless, yeah.
There was some foresight in that, too, and that's a good example of, okay, it's following the trend. We call it trends,
right?
Population trends.
Right.
We took a big hit in the 1990s.
Yeah,
banks. We were on the air doing stories almost every Friday. This bank was cutting jobs.
Right.
Pratt
this bank
Whitney,
was closing this, or it right, was consolidating. Well,
exactly. The
right.
insurance industry.
Yeah.
That's what we were built on here in Connecticut,
right.
At least through the 1900s.
Right.
The mid and late 1900s.
Yeah.
So that's where, you know, I guess the framers, as we'll call them, as they like to be called now, I guess, you know, had a vision. There was vision. And I think it's still very much a living document. The Electoral College is a huge bugaboo. It's, you know, I don't know what the answer
is.
As a government teacher, I don't give my opinion. I give my vexing opinion. I lament on it. You know, I vacillate on it. I guess that's the right word. In some parts I say we should get rid of it, and in other parts I say it should stay.
Mm-hmm.
And we've had two good, glowing examples of it in just short of 20 years.
Yeah, because it does get tested.
Yeah.
It does get tested. And I think you're right in the respect that the framers knew that there had to be something else. There had to be another way to protect the vote,
and
if
the
you will.
The mechanics of it, if you look at the mechanics of it and not the politicalization of
yeah.
it, the mechanics of it keep the United States, the United States.
Mm-hmm.
I often think at night, if we didn't have the Electoral College, would we still be a united United States? That's one of the issues.
Yeah.
Would those big states become, you know, more dominant?
Yeah, and would they actually become annexes to themselves,
exactly.
right?
Exactly.
Because
power
they
groups.
Have the
yeah.
vote.
Power
right,
groups.
Right. And that it is what keeps us the United States. Harry Draws is commenting and he's saying the Electoral College was brilliant.
Well, I'd like to be on Harry's show someday because, you know, I know Harry as a big IT guru.
Yeah.
And I watch his show sometimes and I'm like, wow, I never knew in the 18 years I've known him, he has opinions like this. And I'd like to, I
Harry
like to
is just our resident
listen to
conservative.
Him. Yes, and sometimes I put it on and I just listen.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes I agree and sometimes I don't. But I just listen.
Mm-hmm.
And here's that's an example of a citizen that's fired up and passionate. You might not agree.
Some right.
viewers and listeners might not agree, but he's passionate.
Yes, he is.
And he makes his arguments very poignantly.
Yeah.
Whether sometimes I agree and sometimes I don't, mm-hmm. sometimes it might be a little harsh to me anyway.
Uh-huh.
But he's making his points, and I think he represents an idea or an ideology of some folks.
Yeah, a lot of a population.
Yeah.
You're listening to the show on WNHHLP 103.5 FM, broadcasting live from downtown New Haven. We are streaming live on TuneIn Radio and NewHavenIndependent.org. We're also streaming live video on Facebook Live right now. All you have to do is go to Facebook.com/NewHavenIndependent or just go to your Facebook page and look us up, WNHH.org. And speaking of civics and civic engagement, I would like to let you know that in about 10 minutes, the New Haven Alumni Chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated is doing a monthly, and this is the second one, Community Conversations That Matter, Building the Statewide Legislative Agenda. Wednesday, that's today, from 6:30 to 8 p.m. at the Whitneyville Cultural Commons. It's free. 1253 Whitney Avenue, put that in your GPS, in Hamden, 06517. Join us as we host area state senators and representatives. We'll be discussing education, criminal justice reform, voter disenfranchisement, economic development, and more. This is a free event, so you can bring your family and friends to this informative public meeting. And it is going to be moderated by WNHH's Babs Rawls Ivy of Babs Love Talk. Love Babs Love Talk. I got to get it right. That's my squatty. I should know that. in the studio with me is John DeAndre, who is currently a civics teacher, but was a reporter and served as a legislative aide, not only locally in a nearby suburban town, but at the state capitol. And we are very pleased to have him on the show.
Thank you, Michelle. What you just mentioned, that forum is a good example of grassroots people, average folk, mm-hmm. getting their voice heard by their state lawmakers.
Yeah.
That's a wonderful type of forum for people who feel they might not have a say or feel diminished
mm-hmm.
to go to something like that and to speak their minds and maybe meet people of similar interest.
Yeah, like minds.
Yeah.
So,
Who elects the president is one of the citizenship naturalization questions. One of the naturalization, 100 questions, however many there are, one of the questions is, who elects the president? And the answer is the Electoral College. That's what INS, Immigration and Naturalization Service, wants to hear.
But now,
so with my immigrant adults, you know, and I would drill them a lot of times at the end of classes.
On that, right.
I would always hit them with that. And, you know, their family members would be like, no, this one is wrong.
Right.
No.
Because the public, the people,
right,
elect the president. And it's like, no, if anything, the Electoral College says it agrees. Or it's skewered. Not necessarily wrong, but it's skewered. And people would say that about the Electoral College, that it's skewered.
And you want to talk about a little bit about civics education, too. An offside would be like the monuments, all the national monuments,
mm-hmm.
and the national parks. And
right.
You get like a real feel. There's like no time for that.
Right.
Because the foundations of government, especially in the, if you're school system ascribes to a half-year course that runs, you know, 4 months, there's no time, where the civics would be, you know, the national parks and national monuments, the national holidays.
Okay.
The teaching of the flag. The All flag right. is not technically in the curriculum, but a good social studies teacher teaching the foundations of government should get Flag Day in there and what the essence of Flag Day is.
Right.
Because there's a lot of kids that have no clue unless they have a calendar that says it.
Yeah.
It's Flag Day. Well, so now, what? When is Arbor Day?
You know, right. I mean, that kind right, of thing. That kind of thing. And, you know, the thing, I guess, that interests me always, because I do remember learning a little bit about how the flag is supposed to be flown.
How it's folded.
How it's folded. When it is and is not to be at half staff.
How to salute it.
Yep.
These are the kind of things that fall by the wayside that you can't get in. Now, I'm under the assumption, and I may be wrong, but civics is a full year, or government, excuse me, is a full year in New Haven.
Okay.
On the high school level. So okay. they have a little more time to play.
Yeah.
So they may actually do. I try to definitely get the flag in. When we say the Pledge of Allegiance every morning at our school, mm-hmm. when we get
You still
in,
say Pledge oh, yeah. of Allegiance?
I could remember as a kid at Nathan Hale, okay, in the 60s, not only saying the Pledge of Allegiance, singing My Country Tis of Thee,
yes.
and then saying the Our Father prayer. Okay. And then when we moved to the burbs in the 70s, it was just the Pledge of Allegiance. And I think there may be some codified law that says you have to have a moment of silence now.
Yeah.
You can't say any type
you
of
You can't
prayer.
Say any kind of prayer
but
now.
During the Pledge of Allegiance now in the 21st century, when it says one nation under God, I say one nation under one, some, or no gods. That gets everybody in it, okay? That doesn't, that, okay? Because that is the biggest offense in the pledge itself, the language, with some of the kids. Some of the kids will not stand, they'll sit for that because of the God reference. And the God reference, as everybody knows, wasn't in the original language.
Right.
So I say very clearly, one, some are no gods. That disclaimer evens the playing field. If
so,
you've got a
and explain to people
God.
What that means. Explain to people what that means.
Like, in other words, you're not hurting anyone, because some people take offense to the word God.
Yes.
And especially after 9/11, it became a very politicized society, even in the high schools, about God. So how do you teach government, especially the early documents?
Yeah.
When you look at the early English documents, every other sentence has got the word God in it.
Right.
Okay. You can't, those are static documents, but we're in the 21st century. I add one, some, or no gods. So the people who believe in no God in the classroom don't feel offended. Okay, now some people may say that's not right, but I'm trying to make everybody comfortable in the room, because that's usually when I ask a kid privately, why don't you stand for the pledge? That's
usually
that
it.
Phrase is usually what comes up.
Or is it because their religion is not focused on that particular point?
Yeah, that could be too. It's usually that reference in it.
That offends.
Yeah.
That offends.
So, you know, they think I'm crazy the first time, you know, the first couple of days of school, but then they realize, oh, okay, I get it.
Yeah,
I'm
now
trying
I understand
to be more
it.
Inclusive.
Yeah.
Because, and there are kids that won't stand for it. They'll sit, politely sit, and I don't call them out on it. You know, that's fine. But when I ask them, it's usually that God reference.
Yeah, that's
which is,
the thing.
You know, okay, so they're taking a stand. That's good. You know, I'm not going to get in there, as they would like to say, in their grill, up in their grill on it. That's one of the trendy words about
John it. Cracks me up.
You know, if that's what you believe, fine. You know what? Life is short.
Right.
If you are actually taking a stand about something, I am happy.
Right.
As long as nobody's getting hurt.
Right.
Okay. You're taking a stand. You don't want to say the pledge. Okay. Now, some educators would come after me, hardliners, and say she or he should be standing for the pledge. They're politely sitting down.
They're not bothering anybody.
They're
not talking.
And when I ask them privately, it's usually 9 out of 10 times that statement.
That makes them...
Not that I don't believe in the United States.
Right.
It's that statement. They got to hang up about God. Remember, these are teenagers. They're still forming their value system.
Right.
And some of them may be rebelling against their parents who say, you better be in some sort of a church every single Sunday or Saturday or Friday night.
Right.
Or whenever, on a Tuesday night.
Right.
And that could be some sort of rebellion in them.
Yeah.
And that will go away.
Yeah.
But it's more common, kids not standing up for it. And in the old days, a teacher would go after them. That's, you know, that's the, I'm glad they're at least forming an opinion,
right?
Taking a stand,
right?
Do I agree with it? No, but at least they're showing some sort of executive brain function decision, you know. And for teenagers, executive brain function decisions are difficult.
Yeah, it's because they're not fully formed.
No,
not at all. So, when we look at civics, right? It really boils down to participation.
Yes. What was civics for you?
Well, you're talking to the wrong person, because I think there were a lot of things that I did without being aware that...
Oh, I'm doing civic. I'm doing a civics.
Yeah, I'm doing
I'm showing
a civic
my
thing.
Civics responsibility.
Yeah, because
well,
I mean...
give me a good example, a really hardcore one that you can look back on and hang your hat on. What did you do?
Besides registering people to vote, which I still do, but I haven't gotten an opportunity to do it because when the sorority does it, I'm usually at work or, you know, I've got the show or something like that. But definitely registering people to vote. And I was a protester. I protested and I organized rallies. I helped organize rallies in high school. I protested in high school, and somebody bought it up because they're tearing down Hamden Middle,
yes.
The old Michael J. Whalen,
mm-hmm.
And somebody bought it up on social media that we had a walkout, and I distinctly remember that walkout because we were singing John Lennon's Suburban Kids, right? Power to the people. When we walked out. And I don't remember what we walked out for. And I think I was either in the eighth or ninth grade.
Right.
So, you know, and then, of course, once I got to high school, there were bigger issues, you know, issues of race, mm-hmm. Not so much gender or anything else, but definitely issues of race, which, you know, affected me and how I thought, mm-hmm. And made me make decisions. You know, I won't say they were bad decisions, but I will say that I was very headstrong and I was very adamant about what I believed in. And to this day, I'm still in that mode, but I think I've mellowed with age because I've got a little bit more understanding, a better understanding about people, how things work, and what you're supposed to do, you know, and that's my example. You know, being involved in protests and rallies and marches and registering folks to vote.
I didn't do any of that. But what I did do was, and I can remember in high school, being in touch with the politics part of who was being elected, who wasn't elected, what the issues were in the town. I guess maybe that was my news focus.
Right.
Like, you know. Very in a historian type way, keeping note of things and watching how things played themselves out. You know, I lived part of my life near an airport that blew toxins. Okay, all kinds of toxins. All right, that cracked our walls.
Foundations.
Okay, and foundations. And then I moved and I lived near a toxic chemical plant.
It was
a resins plant with cyanamide.
Wow.
Cytec, which is still there. And up until 1985, it blew toxins in the air. The Quinnipiac River turned yellow and green in the summer, and nobody cared.
Yeah.
But there was nobody else. No one really. Occasionally, there would be these small groups rallying.
Mm-hmm.
I watched it from afar. So I think that was the news reporter in me.
Yeah.
And I kept track of it.
Yeah.
So then when I actually got into news and these things actually came up, And the EPA came in and said, look, we're going to close you down, Cytec.
Yeah.
Get your stuff in order.
Get your stuff in order.
I had the background knowledge.
Yeah.
Or a tweed, you know, my earlier years at Tweed, being, you know, alongside Tweed and, you know, feeling your bedroom shaking like an earthquake when the Eastern Jets would come flying in, you know. I knew then in the 90s when they tried to bring them back or tried to bring larger planes back in, and I'm covering that story, I had the background knowledge.
Yeah.
But I didn't get the opportunity to really do civics.
Until,
I was watching it from afar.
I
had certain passions. And I guess they were human interest things, like things that impacted the immediate society.
Right.
Those things interested me, but I really wasn't out there loud and proud in rallies or registering to vote.
And with that, gotta leave it there.
Okay.
This went by fast.
Wow.
See, told you it was going to go by fast. John DeAndre, I thank you so much for coming in and talking about civics. We're going to have to do it again.
We'll do it again.
All right. John DeAndre is a former legislative aide. He spent 33 years as a broadcast news journalist. He spent first 11 years in radio news full-time and 22 part-time. And now he teaches social studies in a suburban school system. So this is the man that is responsible for me being a heck of a reporter. John DeAndre, thank you.
You helped me.
Appreciate
too.
You. Appreciate you. Yes, I know.
You always gave me the other side.
I sure did. That is so true. That was the
you
very young Michelle
me the
Turner.
Perspective
yes.
That I might not have been seeing.
Yes. Yes, I did. And don't you forget
the
it.
Balance.
Right? The balance.
You were the balance beam.
Thanks, John. Appreciate that.
Good to
and
be here.
This has been the show. On 103.5 FM, WNHHLP, NewHavenIndependent.org.
Excuse me, Dougie Fresh.
Yes!
Have you ever seen a show with fellas on the mic with one-minute rhymes that don't come out right? They bite.
They never write.
That's not polite. Am I lying?
No, you're quite right.
Well, tonight, on this very mic, you're about to hear,
we swear, the best star rappers of the year.
So,
cheerio,
yell,
scream, bravo. Also, if you didn't know, this is called The Show.